Hello, everyone. Welcome to Healthy Talk Show. My name is Marissa.
And I'm Robert. I was losing camera control there. That's why we're not going to do a lot of video mixing while we're doing this show live, because it's just too much. Healthy Talk Show aims to be a weekly discussion of various health topics, cooking segments, interesting guests, and conversations with our viewers. That's all I have to read.
Yes, it is a little bit of an experiment, so I don't think this has been attempted before, a podcast like this.
I don't think so. There's a lot of podcast out there, a lot of commercial interest. I'm kind of against the commercial interest kind of thing, and I like to do deep dives into interesting topics and controversial topics. That's a passion of mine.
So we got a lot of clips for you guys today, so pretty excited. Ooh. Robert, what are we talking about today?
Well, there's a documentary called Take Your Pills on Netflix. Let's watch a clip from that, and we'll revisit this here in a second.
I learned about ADD after being on the medication. I didn't know what it was. All I knew was for
video there.
All right.
I got here, and I was like, holy shit. Everybody takes Adderall. Everyone. I take it right when I wake up. It takes about 40 minutes to kick in.
And it froze.
And you can feel it. Weird. I start to sweat. My heart accelerates.
My handwriting got neater. I thought that was so cool.
My mind came alive. My body felt alive. It works like a bang.
Adderall warning. Side effects may include being awesome at everything.
Every generation has found a different way to try to enhance their performance. Now, in this case, it has been ADHD drugs. This ain't new.
It's not like a glass of wine or a joint or any way that people use to decompress.
So there it is. It's about Adderall.
Yes.
It's a documentary directed by Allison Clayman and produced by Moda Pictures and Netflix Studios, which explores the positive and negative effects of Adderall, along with pressures to take these stimulants and stay ahead of work and school in professional environments. Maria Shriver and Christina Schwarzenegger were actually executive producers on this. Did you know that?
I do now.
Yeah, and executive producers actually don't do anything. They just fund things.
Yeah, so that's also interesting.
Yeah, I actually didn't know that her and Arnold Schwarzenegger got divorced.
Yeah.
He was our former governor. I think you would know that here in California.
All right, so let's actually listen to the clip that you have about the Christina Schwarzenegger.
And it's not just around, like, I mean, especially around finals or midterms. I would say probably when you see it the most, but it's also
I don't know why the video is freezing.
Recreationally. So people use it to go out, stay out longer, things like that. And it's not like just my college specific. It's from all of my siblings that I've spoken to. They say the same thing. Well, just even off my own personal experience, kind of looking back, taking a step back and looking at Adderall and the way I functioned on Adderall, I think that the downsides is that you miss a lot of moments for connection with people. You're very zoned in, which is great for doing schoolwork and all that, but I think you miss a lot. You miss connecting with people. You miss chances to be out in nature, just kind of relax. You're wired 24/7, so that's all taken away, I guess, when you're using it that much. And I think those are very important things that all of us humans need, are connections, to have friends, to be social. I think that suffers a lot for people when they're...
There we go.
Yeah. So there are a few interesting points that she brings up, and this is why it's interesting to me, since I work on college campuses, so it makes me wonder how many people are abusing this.
Mm-hmm. And I work in professional environment, and I also work around high performers in certain cases, and are they on Adderall?
Yeah.
It's kind of...
And so these are the questions we're going to be kind of looking into, is what kind of a culture we're creating. And, you know, is this healthy?
Yeah.
What are the limits too?
Yep. So Urban Dictionary, I thought it was funny, defines Adderall as a performance-enhancing drug for the mind, largely abused by college students and overprescribed to obnoxious elementary children who have gone on their parents' last nerve. Use with caution. Pop too many of these knowledge candies and you could find yourself thinking in binary code while trying to simulate forgotten human emotions.
That's a pretty interesting definition.
Yeah. That was pretty funny.
So let's ask, what is Adderall? So I'll pull up good old Wikipedia for us.
Oh, sorry, babe.
Oh, no worries.
Gotta cue me. Sorry.
So we could There's Adderall a stimulant right there. Page. So Adderall is a stimulant. So stimulant is just described as anything that can increase the activity of the central nervous system. It's speed.
Well,
they're a little different.
Yep. That's the thing. That's a lot of the counterpoints, which we'll visit in a second. Well, towards the end are, there's a lot.
Yeah. So what we're looking at is amphetamine. So that's the proper name for Adderall. And we're going to be comparing it to meth as well. All right.
Screenshot?
Yeah, screenshot. Amphetamine?
Sorry.
Oh, no worries.
Screenshot two. There we go. Bam.
So these are the two drugs. So these are the amphetamine. That's going to be the Adderall and the methylphenidate. That is Ritalin.
Mm-hmm.
And we can show those next screenshots as well. So there's amphetamine. And next shot. So that's Ritalin, or Concerta is also what it's known at. So now we're going to play this interesting clip, basically comparing meth and Adderall.
Yes.
Wealthier kids have access to purified pharmaceutical speed, and other communities have access to meth, you know, cooked meth. Although the potency is definitely greater in crystal meth and smoking it, etc., at the neuroreceptor sites, it has the exact same effects.
Oh, that's weird. Why'd that pop up? That's a picture of... What is that picture of? Oh, that's the end of the clip. Video. Oh, yeah. That's a really weird looking... Here, let's go to the side-by-side. There we go. All right. Zero.
So she makes some assertions in this clip, and we're going to analyze that. And also, we want to get your opinions. So if you guys have used Adderall, feel free to call in. If you like it, if you use it for ADHD, for any purposes, we want to know.
Yes, we want to talk about it because we've... Well, you've used Adderall once?
I tried it once.
Yes. And how was it?
I tried half a pill and then I fell asleep.
Oh, so, that did not work for you.
Yeah. I'm not the typical user. And there are definitely a lot of studies.
It didn't stimulate you?
No. Which is kind of strange. So let's see. So let's pull up. Do you have a screenshot of looking at
the comparison?
Yes.
Of
Addy versus
right
meth. So this is a chemical structure.
Stop doing that.
Of Adderall. Up at the top, and then methamphetamine down at the bottom. So what's kind of interesting is they look very similar. So you can see there's just a difference of the methyl group. So you see there's a methyl group hanging off of that nitrogen, the big N.
Yep.
And that methyl group is really the only distinction between the two. So chemically, they act the same. And we do have a video to explain how amphetamines, so that's going to be Adderall and meth. They're both amphetamines. Do people know what a methyl? That's a good point. So the methyl group is that little CH3 hanging off of the N. Just really small differences.
CH3 hanging off the N.
Yeah, right, so that's one little group. And so if you guys have taken organic chemistry with me, you probably know how to convert Adderall to meth. Just saying. So, Robert, if you could cue up that.
Yep, the video.
Yep, that explains the difference between
amphetamine binds to the transporter proteins for monoamines like dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin.
Let's restart it. Nope.
And then can be taken up into neurons. Amphetamine binds to the transporter proteins for monoamines like dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin. And then can be taken up into neurons via these transporter proteins.
There it is.
Once inside the neuron, amphetamine disrupts the storage of monoamines in synaptic vesicles. One way it does this is by inhibiting a protein called vesicular monoamine transporter 2, or VMAT2, whose normal role is to transport monoamines into vesicles. Inhibition of VMAT2 leads to higher levels of these neurotransmitters in the neuron. All
right. Can you pause this video
through
for
a mechanism
second?
Or mechanism?
Yes. I'll be after the stream. We'll do tutoring and chemistry.
We're doing chemistry tutoring after this show.
So I wanted to pause it here just to break this part down. If you could flip back to the video screen.
Full screen?
Yeah.
You got it.
So what he's talking about, those monoamines, and it's increasing the amount of monoamines. And those are symbolized by those little green dots in there. So those monoamines that it's increasing, that's going to be dopamine. That's your reward chemical. serotonin, that's your happy chemical, and then norepinephrine or adrenaline, so that's your flight or fight response. So it's increasing all those chemicals in your synapses there. Was there a little bit left to that clip?
Yes.
Finish it off?
Yep.
Is there still...
And it's frozen.
Understood. Back. Amphetamine is then able to cause the monoamine transporter proteins to run in reverse, leading to the increased release of monoamines, especially dopamine and norepinephrine, and increased levels of these neurotransmitters in the synaptic cleft. These elevated monoamine levels can have various effects on different parts of the central nervous system. Increased dopamine...
It's done.
Yeah. So that's really interesting.
Okay, but, you know, stimulants and all that, that's all good.
Yeah.
What about caffeine? I drink coffee every single day. I drink large amounts. I'm drinking coffee right now.
So, caffeine is one of my favorite stimulants.
Okay.
But they actually work a little differently. So, if you could cue up that next video talking about caffeine.
Coffee makes a lot of people poop. It's great for diets.
You know, that's one thing about Healthy Talk Show. Listen to your body. That's our number one advice.
Yes, listen to your body.
Amphetamine binds to the transporter proteins for monoamines like dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin.
Oops, sorry.
And then
click the wrong one.
Most of the effects of caffeine are thought to be traceable back to its action as an antagonist at receptors for a neurotransmitter called adenosine. This means that caffeine binds to adenosine receptors and blocks adenosine from binding there and activating the receptor. Thus, it reduces activity at the adenosine receptor. Although there are four subtypes of the adenosine receptor, most of caffeine's effects are thought to be due to its antagonistic actions at the A1 and A2A subtypes. Its ability to promote wakefulness may be especially due to actions at the A2A receptor subtype. How exactly the antagonism of the adenosine receptor translates into the effects of caffeine is not completely clear. Research suggests, however, that adenosine receptors are involved in promoting and regulating sleep.
Done.
All right. So that kind of explains the different mechanisms. But again, it's very interesting to note that meth, which is very illegal, and amphetamine or Ritalin are essentially the same thing.
Yes. Essentially the same thing, but a lot of people dispute that claim.
Oh, do we also have that Adderall versus caffeine website that we can look at?
Yes, we do. Let me pull that up.
So we're going to talk about a few more differences between Adderall and caffeine, specifically the half-life, which is very interesting to consider when we talk about these compounds. So they're actually, you know, again, they're both stimulants, so they have similar effects. So they both can treat asthma. So actually we'll talk about the history of meth and tell you what it was used for. So scroll down a little bit.
Yep.
Let's find, I'm trying to find, oh, there we go. The half-life. So it's at the very top. Yep. So the half-life of caffeine is only 4 hours and the half-life of Adderall is 34 hours.
And that means again, how long it stays in the body.
Yeah. So the half-life is officially defined as how long it takes to decay to 50% of the original material. And so caffeine, of course, is much more easily metabolized by your body, while Adderall is not. So we'll address that later. So
it's very close to being the same thing. Frightening and close. So, you know, compare it to anything else. And
And so we have a question, will Adderall make me smarter? So
that is a question that is addressed in the movie, actually.
you don't want to drink methanol, actually.
Yeah, that's not the best idea. You could. You can do whatever you want if you're in America.
I wouldn't.
If you're in America, you can do whatever you want. United States.
Yes.
Home of the brave.
So these are pretty interesting questions. And then it also kind of leads me to wonder, you know, why are they treated so differently, meth versus Adderall?
Yeah.
And so we do have PDF number one.
Ooh, PDF time.
Where we talk about the strength differences. And I'm focusing a lot on the methyl group because, you know, that's always the argument that they're different. But so the methyl group just kind of increases its ability to cross the blood-brain barrier, makes it more soluble. And so they did do this study that said, so they compared the effects of amphetamine versus methamphetamine, and they did find that methamphetamine triggers a stronger response. So chemically, so it is a stronger drug. Yep. There's also arguments in other studies that have said that it depends on how you take it. So typically Adderall is taken orally while meth is smoked. So the argument is if you smoked Adderall, it would end up like meth.
Yes, that is the argument to be made.
Yes.
That's insane.
So it's very interesting. Another thing that I read also said that you could convert meth back to Adderall or amphetamine, essentially, once it's lit. So in that burning process, you can demethylate it and then it becomes Adderall. So there's a lot of, you know, important things to keep in mind, such as dosing. And I think like typical appropriate levels of Adderall are 10 to 20 mg. But some of these students that we'll hear, they're taking 60 mg for these study binges.
Yep.
And that's not healthy.
Yeah. And actually, switching gears a little bit here, I went to streetrx.com.
Oh, yeah. I was really excited for
which
this.
Which is, I did a little, you're the science person. I'm more of the not science person. No, I'm a scientist, just a social scientist.
You I could see. Inject it as well. So that
I
would,
actually need to.
So if you were to inject.
I'm going to do a search for Adderall.
If you were to inject Adderall, that would also get it into your body a lot faster than ingesting.
Well, actually, these aren't buying. They're not buying large amounts. Look at that. $6, $4, $10, $100. Holy crap.
Wow.
You overpaid, dude.
San Francisco, too many tech guys. Maybe demand is up, you know, market.
That's okay. If you're going to sell legal Adderall, you know where to go.
I'm just saying.
San Francisco. San Francisco. Oh, man.
So these are, again, very interesting questions. If you guys want to call in, give commentary, what's our phone number?
So that's a great question.
509-878-3229.
That is the phone number.
Call us, Healthy Talk Show. We want to hear from you guys. What's your experience with Adderall? Good, bad?
Yep.
We want to hear
it all. Indifferent.
All right, so let's start looking into the history of amphetamine.
Okay.
I think we have a good old Wikipedia.
We do. Wikipedia. The
history.
There we go.
Let's see. So we're looking just at the history of amphetamine. It was first synthesized in 1887 in Germany. It was also related to, so around the same time as this Japanese chemist isolated ephedrine. So little bit similar compound. If you click on ephedrine, you can see that it's structurally similar. Damn. So you can see how it's kind of the precursor to meth. It just has that extra OH and group, which can be removed. Again, I'm not going to go into the synthesis. Take Ochem for that.
Take Ochem.
And so if we go back to the history.
Sorry.
So we see, so the 1930s, it was used as a decongestant because they used to sell it under the name Benzedrine. So it was an inhaler form and people really liked it and they started abusing it was a problem. And then later, so we go on to the history, they started using it in World War II.
Yeah. There's a video explaining that.
Oh, yeah. Let's watch that video.
Let's cue that up here.
Definitely don't drink antifreeze.
Not recommended, although it is very sweet.
Kamikaze pilots used methamphetamine.
Frozen.
Methamphetamine was first synthesized in 1893 by a respectable Japanese scientist when he isolated the stimulant ephedrine from the ephedra sinensia plant. In 1919, one of his protégés synthesized the crystalline form of the ephedrine, making the world's first ever crystal meth. Amphetamines wouldn't become popular until World War II, when military forces on both sides of the war decided to use them. The Japanese form of amphetamine was called Philippon, and the government stockpiled it and gave it to their soldiers whenever they got tired and hungry. They also found it was helpful with their special unit, the Kamikaze Pilots. The unit had special planes, the Yokosuka MXY-7 Oka, which were essentially drivable missiles where the pilot was sealed into the cockpit. They were attached to a bomber and then flown into battle. Once they were released and close to their target, they hit the booster rockets, flew past enemy gunfire, and would hopefully slam into an enemy ship. Obviously, not all kamikaze pilots were exactly super pumped about killing themselves by flying into a wall of steel. This was especially the case because they may have been sealed into the small cockpit for several hours before getting to the target.
Jeez,
this is a lot of time to think and reconsider your commitment to the mission. So essentially, they were given high doses of Philippon to keep themselves alert, sharp, and aggressive until they got to their target. Then we have to assume they had one of the wildest drug trips ever taken.
Wow.
Jeez.
So that was interesting. And it was used on all sides of the war, really.
Yes.
So Germans, Japanese,
us.
Americans.
Yeah. Definitely
all,
us.
Everyone was trying to look for that drug that will make the super soldier.
Super soldier Captain America.
Yeah.
That's the...
And there was also a lot of propaganda of the pep pills.
Yes.
All the bennies.
We couldn't... It was really hard to find propaganda on this stuff, though.
Also, if anyone happens to know whether Pep Kellogg's actually contain any sort of amphetamines, we would love to know.
Yes, because we have to corroborate that in the documentary. The documentary claims that, and it's very misleading and very...
They definitely implied that.
They implied that...
It was really weird.
Yeah, which is weird, but we have yet to corroborate it. It's really bothering us because it's... Why would you throw that in there?
Yes.
It's kind of random.
It is widely known that Coke used to contain cocaine, which they were trying to make the comparison to, but again...
Yep.
If anyone knows, that'll be interesting.
Yeah, his bald head does look fake. I agree with you in the chat room there, Cataracts TV.
Yeah. And then, so throughout the 60s, we had this rise of amphetamine abuse. I think we have a little graph for that.
Yes. The screenshots are less than intuitive. 7?
Yep.
Yep, sorry. It's the less than intuitive.
So this is kind of where the government started getting involved. So there's too much consumption. People are getting addicted. People are realizing that this is, you know, a drug with potential side effects. It can cause elevated heart rates. So some people were having seizures or passing out, heart attacks. So we have 8 billion pills. And so after this, this is when it started getting more regulated. I believe it's class 2 substance. So hard to get. That's also kind of when methamphetamine became more regulated.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, you know, they're still pushing this drug. And that's why things kind of got remarketed almost. So now they get under the name of Adderall. And which other drugs.
Which in the movie they explained it as being ADD for all, I think it was. ADD for all, and then there's Adder.
Yeah.
ADD all, and then the ER in the between. That's interesting.
Yeah. That was also interesting as they started marketing more towards kids and kind of approaching the schools.
To do studies on kids.
Yeah.
Which was interesting because, well, there's a clip of Dr. Connors... The late Keith Connors, who, well, let's see, he actually was the father of ADHD, what was he coined as? He was huge in ADHD research. He was the big dog.
And the only way to get it is to ask SIBA for it, the Swiss company that marketed it. And so they said, hey, SIBA, can we have a gazillion pills? And this oil drum-sized barrel of Ritalin pills ends up coming to Johns Hopkins so that they can do their trials.
In those days, it was possible to go to the principal and say, you know, we're trying out a new drug. And he said, oh my God, if you could just calm these little bastards down, it would be wonderful. We arranged a study on the spot and did a 2-week trial. The children called the pills math pills because...
Math pills.
I love this quote. Man, so pills. There's a few things that are very interesting about this study. So we go to PDF 2.
PDF 2.
And also, I did want to address the comment. So, yeah, illegal drugs are only legal if you have lobbying power. That's kind of the question that we're asking.
Yes.
Is what is the big difference between meth and amphetamine? Why does one have such a bad connotation? But if we look at how these studies were done, so they go to the schools and they see if they respond favorably. So sorry, I'll just scroll down a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for a nice graph at the bottom.
It's all right.
And I'll explain.
PDFs are okay. This one?
No, keep scrolling.
You tell me when.
Oh, I think we passed it. That one.
Okay.
So we could zoom in on this.
On the graph?
Yeah, that little chart there. So this was a small study, but it was comparing motor activity and free recall in normal boys versus ADH boys. And they found that both had decreased motor activity. And then they also felt better in the free recall. And so a lot of these studies do show that everyone responds favorably in kind of the immediate recall tasks, which is very interesting.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes you wonder, how do they establish these diagnoses then? Yeah, recall as in memory. So short-term memory tasks. I was just trying to cram information in, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think is why they're popular.
Yes, cramming, especially with college students.
Yeah, so if we go back to the documentary, we'll watch this clip. So clip 10.
Clip 10?
Yeah.
You're jumping around on me.
Sorry.
Because we had 8 and 9 and now 10.
Oh, whoops.
But it's okay. But I'm just letting you know. Jumping around on me.
Oh, sorry. We could do 8,
clip
actually.
10, clip 10. Or 8?
Yeah, I went out of order. That was my
Okay. Well, here's 8 of... This is actually Keith Connors being asked when he tried Adderall and what it was like. So this is the father of ADHD research. One of the guys who... Big into this. This is what he said.
The only way to get it is to ask SIBA for it.
Have you tried any of the stimulants yourself?
One time in that first Ritalin study.
Video's freezing.
It was sort of late afternoon. I felt like it was such an enhancement of my day. So, yes, you know, it was a good experience, and thank goodness I did not decide to dip into that barrel ever again.
I like his comment that he said he's glad he decided not to dip in again.
Yeah, and into the barrel too.
Yeah.
I can just imagine him. Ritalin.
But that's the problem, is everyone responds favorably because it is a stimulant. It's going to make you feel good.
Yes, and I don't have any conversations I can talk about with too much detail, but I've had conversations with people and they are convinced that this is helping people 100% all the time. And stimulants are always helping people 100% all the time. They stimulate. That's what they do.
Yes.
It's in the name. Stimulant.
Yes. And again, what's the difference between appropriate use? And that's what we're asking today, you know, is where's the line in the spectrum of ADHD diagnosis? You know, where is someone actually benefiting and when is someone maybe taking too much advantage or abusing it? It's very interesting.
And we actually pulled an interesting clip of the logic of the diagnoses back then. I think it was in the 90s when it was really being pushed back when I was in grade school. And let's just play that here.
Not so many years ago, medical profession thought, well, wait a minute, I'm not sure if this kid has ADHD or not. There's no definitive test. I'll give her a stimulant and see if it works. If it works, she has ADHD. If it doesn't, she doesn't. Interesting idea, probably wrong. Most everybody who takes a stimulant does focus better and longer, can pull that all-nighter.
Yeah.
So everyone feels good.
In the chat room there, do you feel good or do you feel good because you accomplish stuff? Exactly. It's more about just feeling good.
Yeah.
It just makes you feel good.
But it all goes back to the mechanism of how it works. It is increasing all the dopamines, the serotonin, so you feel good. You feel great.
Yep.
But it doesn't actually mean that you're smarter.
Yep.
And then we see this too in the mom.
Yes.
Now appropriately cue that clip.
Yep. This is the mom of one of the older young adults in the documentary named Jasper, who was on Adderall?
Yeah,
Adderall for a while, and now he's actually off of it. Spoiler warning, but yeah, here's his mom talking about how she cute clip.
Play. Able to concentrate more, and I tested it because I wanted to see what it did, and apparently I have ADHD too because it worked. So it just kind of helped you concentrate.
So again, logic. If it works, I must have ADHD. I don't know. That's weird that that's in the movie, though.
Yeah.
That kind of seems like that was maybe they found this lady and she didn't know what she was talking about. And they said, yeah, let's put this in the documentary to make her sound stupid. Because it doesn't.
But I found it more interesting. And we may talk about this later. Mm-hmm. But I know some of the criticized her that she was dumb or ill-informed. But
yeah.
You know, I feel like the point is the stimulant will work on everybody. It is a stimulant.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, we might go back to this topic. I just want to address that the long-term effects are not well studied. And that's what's also scary. And that's why we want to talk about it. I don't want to spoil too much.
You can spoil all that. It's fine. There's no suspense.
But yeah, essentially there are not enough studies done.
Most things.
Yeah, so there you do not know the long-term effects of all these children that we've been medicating for many, many years.
Yep. And the documentary, I think, is more skewed on the negative side.
Yeah.
But it does have functioning adults, Silicon Valley professional who rides around on some unicooter electric thing, looking like a typical Silicon Valley dude. And he loves it. He thinks it's the best thing ever, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. Where are we at? We're on the rundown here.
All right, let's check out Screen Grab 8, 9, 10.
8, 9, 10.
So that's talking about increased diagnosis, I believe.
Go over.
So essentially, in the 90s, they're approaching the schools also as well. So we played that clip. So we looked in 1990, 600,000 children were on stimulants. And then we flipped.
2011 grew to 3.5 million.
Yeah, 3.5 million. So that is crazy.
America diagnoses more kids with ADHD than anywhere in the world. If you look there, it's kind of blurry. Sorry about that. 11% here in the U.S. Oh, that's a picture of us on our couch with our dogs.
Yes, that's us researching.
That was a secret. Ah, you can slide left to right on pictures.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
No, that's not cool.
Oh,
not for the production. What's up?
Keep it there a second. Okay. So what's interesting, too, about this, so there have been studies done trying to see of ADHD levels throughout the world, of course. And everyone has about the same percentage, they estimate, of ADHD levels. That's about 5% of the population has ADHD. But then America tends to over-prescribe the medication compared to the rest of the world. And it's also really interesting the different cultural differences and also the marketing differences. So we can go into that clip too.
Yep. Here's marketing.
Maybe why we're so medicated.
This VLC thing hurts me every time.
The United States also is one of only two developed nations that allows the direct-to-consumer advertising of controlled substances. So when it came to ADHD drugs, it wasn't just for children who are hyperactive, who can't concentrate in school. What they wanted to do is make the mothers more comfortable. Oh my goodness, my kid now takes out the garbage. What a wonderful world, thanks to Adderall XR.
And that is why everyone seems to be medicated in the United States, in my opinion. It's because we're marketed. It's what it is. It's direct marketing. One of only two first developed.
That is really interesting.
First world nations.
And there's a lot of other interesting factors that have been going on that may also be leading to these increased diagnoses. So they did update and expand the definition.
In the DSM?
In the DSM-5.
Got you.
Oh, man, you're ahead of me.
Got you.
And so they mention that they are subtle differences, but they do expand it. Let's see, zoom in a little. So I was trying to So scroll down just a hair.
We're going to give you PDF control.
There we go. Yeah, next time. So notice that they lowered the amount of symptoms that have to manifest down from 6 to 5. And that they used to say that the onset of symptoms have to be before age 7. Now they changed that before age 12. And so this also raises questions, because now we're going to have more people on the being diagnosed with ADHD. So that's also interesting. And then it's also interesting the type of support. I think we have a screenshot. Or wait, it's not a screenshot. It's one of our websites.
Oh, website.
It's the CDC.
Yep, got it.
Statistics. And what I wanted to highlight there is if you scroll down to the bottom, there's a map of the U.S. and it shows, yes, that one, perfect. So it shows medication treatment and behavioral therapy treatment. So there's some argument, too, that we're over-medicating because we don't want to take the time to do the behavioral therapy. So if we look, so in California, for instance, they're less than 70% medication treatment and then more behavioral treatment. So that's kind of interesting. And then if we look at other states that are more heavily medicated, we see that maybe they don't do as much behavioral therapy.
The dot gets smaller.
Yeah.
The little yellow dot gets substantially smaller.
So that's also really interesting.
Here's pretty good. Colorado.
Yeah.
Good balance there.
And so these are some of the cultural differences, too, that may explain the differences in ADHD levels. So different cultures, especially the Chinese, historically have kind of had this attitude that you need to learn and grow. And, you know, just that's part of being a better person. And that's also interesting. So maybe we need to actually, you know, raise our children. But that goes into other issues of. But it's hard that we're not giving our children enough support and instead just expecting a pill to fix everything.
Yeah, and there's Jasper from the documentary here. He's got a comment on that. All right, let's go here. Come on, Jasper. Where you at?
I got to school and I stopped taking it so much. I only take it when I write, really. This isn't pot and, like, booze. This is meth and it's screwing with your liver. Like, when I was in senior year, I wasn't allowed to, like, drink or anything because they were worried it was, like, shutting down. Like, my blood work wasn't looking good. There was, like, too many enzymes or something. Like, I had to constantly be looking at my poop to see what color it was. Like, if that's the case, then this isn't really worth it.
You don't want to look at the color of your poop. Do not eat at Burger King.
Yeah. And what's also interesting, I believe Christina Shriver also mentioned, or Schwarzenegger, sorry, mentioned that her liver enzymes were elevated as well. So that's, you know, maybe signs of liver damage. I actually couldn't find studies about that. I need to maybe keep looking into it, but there are not a lot of long-term studies. What was interesting too, oh, perfect, you have the hyperactive.
Yep, whenever you're ready.
So this is also interesting. We can probably just leave it up there. I'll just give a little overview.
Okay.
So ADHD diagnoses have been increasing in India in the middle class. So probably it's kind of like that smart pill. They obviously want to get their children the best chance that they can, so they turn to these pills. I don't know. It's worrisome.
Yeah.
The hyper-competitive culture that breeds this almost need for Adderall. Or need.
Yes. It's probably a societal thing. That's what a lot of people are thinking now.
Yeah.
Through my sourcing, I asked a bunch of people that don't want to be named on the show. Yeah. And never give their permission, so I probe people for their experiences on Adderall. Everyone likes taking it, but nobody recommends taking it. So
yeah, no one wants to talk about it.
Yeah, that too.
If you guys want to talk about it, keep chatting with us in the chat, or you can also call us in 509-878-3229.
Yep. Talking about the documentary, Take Your Pills on Netflix. What do you want to go into next? Rundown's kind of a...
I'm still talking about the culture thing.
Okay, go.
But, Yeah, it's okay if you don't know how you feel about the topic. That's why we're talking about it today.
Don't ask, don't tell.
That's what it seems like, and that's what's worrisome, though. Because if people are abusing it, though, and their health could be suffering, you know, we want people to be healthy.
Yeah, and who's really...
Who's benefiting, too?
Shire PLC, they own Adderall.
Yeah.
And on their website, it said, our innovative therapies treat extremely rare and life-threatening diseases. Our portfolio of specialist therapies include products that are available in over 100 countries around the world. Bastards.
Yeah.
Yeah. They only have 22,000 employees. Oh. They're not that big of a company.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, too, what's interesting, too, is the rates of diagnoses can vary very widely from, like, city to city almost.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see, like, a spike all of a sudden where maybe even 33% of the people will be medicated. So that's really interesting when, you know, again, the average is only about 5% of the people. But it's always hard to distinguish. So now we can talk more about the adverse effects. And, you know, this leads us into what are we doing to our bodies with this culture? I think we could put a PDF 6.
PDF 6. You skipped 5.
Yeah. 5, 4 and 5 are kind of related.
It's okay.
So we have the adverse effects. Clicking. Yeah, we can scroll in.
Okay.
So one of the issues is this kind of maintenance therapy for ADHD that it's called. Maintenance therapy, meaning you're going to be on this substance for a very prolonged period of time. So we saw that Jasper, he was on the medication for almost 2 decades.
So it's not to fix something.
Not necessary. Or
to repair it. It's to just maintain it.
Right.
Okay.
Or I guess what you're kind of leading into is once you're diagnosed for life now. You're on this pill for life.
Yeah.
And, you know, is that the best choice? And so there's not a lot of research, and that's kind of what this paper emphasizes. So we see that early amphetamine treatment has been linked to slowing in height and weight growth in children. So they compared these children. Amphetamines are also the most abused medication. So amphetamines tend to be really addictive. Let me scroll down myself. Yep.
For adults, you highlighted Adderall XR is approved at doses up to 20 milligrams per day.
Yeah. And I think there's some clip of this girl talking about taking 60. Yeah.
Yeah, in the trailer.
It's not a fix. It's just kind of this Band-Aid. So, yeah, if we look at that CNS side effects, so that's central nervous system side effects. We see the amphetamines. So again, this is all amphetamines. Do we want to look at that, the misinformation medium post as well?
We can. I don't think I have it queued.
Oh.
I think
I put in the screenshots, but.
Oh, did you? Okay, I can pull
if
it.
I didn't.
If it's in the screenshots, I can pull it up right now.
So we were trying to find the criticisms medium article of this film.
Yeah, that's when we were screen grabbing instead of. Yeah. The correct
one. Did you look at that? I upload the learning. Google one too.
The Google one. Well, here's the Medium one. No, I have our. I do have Google one.
Yeah.
Google
one. So if you Google meth versus Adderall and meth, it's the top 4 hit. The 4th one down is this person claiming that Adderall and meth aren't the same thing. So if you go back to that article, they make some false assertions, which is really troubling to me because, again, this is really high on the hit. So they make this comment that Adderall, that meth can cross the blood-brain barrier, but amphetamine can't. It can't.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, they're the same. There have been plenty of studies. They have the same mechanism of how they function. It's just meth, again, tends to be a little bit stronger.
Yep.
So if we go back to the PDF. Yep. Sorry, I'm making you do a lot of work.
It's okay. You want to go back to which PDF? You got
to
tell me.
Yeah, PDF 6. Back to
6,
the...
6, yep. Just tell me that.
So back to these side effects.
Oops, wrong one. There we go.
So we see that amphetamine does cross the blood-brain barrier. And then, So it has similar side effects to meth, especially in high doses, which can include disturbances of mood, cardiac and gastrointestinal effects, loss of appetite, insomnia. So it's actually just prescribed as a weight loss pill. And sometimes meth is actually still prescribed as a weight loss pill.
Ooh. Meth is prescribed still?
Yes.
What? That's crazy. I thought meth is dangerous and kills people.
And we jail people for meth.
Whoa. We also jail people for marijuana still.
Yeah. That's
a tangent. Sorry.
That's for another show.
Another topic. Episode 2.
Episode 2. So yeah, a lot of different complications. Another thing, so if we recall back to that half-life, we don't have to switch back to it, but if we recall back at a 34-hour half-life, so that means that you're being exposed to this constantly. So they notice that 24 hours after meth, there was still present in the blood. And this could also maybe lead to cardiovascular complications over time.
Are you going into the side effects?
Yeah.
Long term?
Yeah. I'm scrolling around PDF.
Gotcha.
Oh, wait. What was interesting, too, is the emergency room visits have increased for patients 55 and older for using amphetamines. So maybe older people need to be competitive still.
Yeah. With the younger kids on Adderall. So now they're jumping in. Yeah.
All right. Sorry. What I was looking for was this study. Because going back to what Cataracts was asking is it safe at these low dosages? Well, if you wanted to scroll to PDF 6 on page 7.
Got it.
And if you guys, we'll be posting this in the show notes so you guys can read along for yourselves.
Yep. And we will also, page 7, we're going to give her control over being able to display stuff too.
Yeah. Next time.
Yeah.
We have.
I had an epiphany today, 5 minutes before the show.
Yeah. So they said in rodents that this long-term exposure didn't really seem to do much damage. But actually in primates, they were given the same equivalent dosage as we would for Adderall, and they did notice damage. So they noticed reduction in the striatal dopamine. So that might be signs of long-term damage. And if you... They were talking about the damage caused from amphetamine and methamphetamine, generally referred to as neurotoxicity. So that's from high levels of a substance.
Mm-hmm.
So they essentially found that, you know, it's damaging the dopaminergic nerve terminals. So it's, you know, messing up your monoamine transporters. So again, all those things that are responsible for regulating dopamine, serotonin, adrenaline. So that's really scary.
Yes.
But, you know, again, there haven't been a lot of long-term studies to study the low dose consequences. And there also aren't enough control studies, which is kind of disturbing. So control studies being done on people with that have ADHD but are not on medication long-term. So there's a lot of studies that still need to be done. And to address like the liver side effects, the cardiac side effects. So what happens if your heart is always stimulated all the time and you're always in that flight or fight. Yeah. Response mode. So it's very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. It really is. So, is it good or is it bad?
I don't know. Yeah. You know, it seems like there's a lot of potential for abuse, which is worrisome.
Yeah. Keith Connors, again, revisiting him, the one who pushed me, the big guy behind ADHD research, the late Keith Connors, he passed last year, I believe. New York Times did an article about him saying that Dr. Connors came to see the ascendance of ADHD as a mixed blessing. The explosion of the diagnosis and the reckless prescribing of stimulant drugs were hardly on his account alone. In 1991, the English United States Educational Department made students with ADHD officially eligible for special education, which accelerated rates of diagnosis, and drug makers have aggressively marketed their products to parents, doctors, and adults who think they have attention deficits. But in 2013, with the New York Times, Dr. Connors, then a professor emeritus at Duke, expressed dismay that some 15% of high schoolers reported giving ADHD diagnosis. The numbers make it look like an epidemic. Well, it's not. It's preposterous, he said. This is a concoction to justify the giving out of medication at unprecedented and unjustified levels. So that's coming out of the man who was a main pusher, the man who went to the principal in that little animated piece on the Netflix documentary and said, and the principal said, if you can anything to calm those little bastards down.
Yeah.
Anything to calm them down.
Yes.
That's
And what we're asking today is, you know, since it is overprescribed, why is it being overprescribed? Why are we creating such a culture that has this need to be hyper?
Yeah. Stimulated.
Yes.
So even like you were saying, it was about the super soldier back during World War II.
Yeah.
And so why do we need a bunch of super soldiers running around?
Or why must we be coding machines 24/7 or super students studying nonstop? You know,
you have a screen. Do you have PDF 7 ADHD and screen time?
I do.
If you want to visit that?
Going into kind of like our culture is maybe we're kind of creating this ADHD culture with our media consumption. And so this was an interesting study. Let's see. I'm trying to read exactly how many people did it. So 4,000 students, I believe.
Wow.
And so scroll down. Let's look at the results.
Yep, results are always the best part. Yeah, just go to the end.
Yes. Oh, so it's 2,500 or so students. And they said that they did not have a significant symptoms of ADHD at the baseline. Then they followed up later at 22.6 months.
There we go. Sorry.
And they found that they had increased levels of ADHD symptoms in most people. So they had a 4.6 mean rate of having ADHD symptoms across follow-ups. So very interesting. So there's kind of this question, you know, is our Facebook, the Instagram, right? You're scrolling through just seconds to grab your attention. Is this breeding the culture of ADHD?
I would say it definitely is. That is the culture that we're in now. The instant culture, the instant boop, on, off, on, off, on, off. Look at Instagram. Engagement on Instagram. What is engagement?
It's ADHD. Tap.
Yeah, it's a double tap. You're not actually analyzing anything. You're just quick in and quick out.
Yeah.
Quick fix.
And that's a really good question, too, of how much responsibility falls on the parents.
Yeah, in the chat room.
Yeah.
A pookie.
But that goes into a lot of factors, which we'll tackle. You know, I don't want to get too tangential, but parents perhaps are overburdened.
We're actually going to revisit that in a second here when we go into the criticisms of the film.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
The diagnosis too, it does kind of depend because it is a spectrum and it's kind of self-reported. So maybe you start to feel like you're not focusing enough because our culture expects this hyper-focus, this performance, but we're constantly being distracted by everything.
Everything. Your phone distracts you.
Yes.
Your phone summons you. A notification on your phone is a summoning to you. You are not summoning the phone. It is summoning you. It's a distraction. You cannot, I don't care. Anyone who says they can multitask, it's not a real thing. You can't actually multitask. You can't do two tasks at the same time.
It's true. It's
physically impossible. You can't do it.
Yeah.
You can do multiple tasks. And break them up.
What's also interesting too is some of the side effects of ADHD are being socially withdrawn. How might you disagree with that?
Go back to the side effects of ADHD. Where is that at?
I'm not sure where it is, but just some of the side effects are saying that you're kind of more socially withdrawn. And I think Christina Schwarzenegger mentioned that as well, that you are kind of more inward. And I think we're kind of losing our ability to socially connect with people. You know, the eye contact, the subtleties. But when you become so focused, it's a little bit difficult. Yeah. Huh. Talking about multitasking.
You can do multiple tasks. They just may not be meaningful tasks. Well, can you, though? We'll have to talk off the show about that, because I can go back and forth on that one for a long time. Yeah. We can go philosophical on that one.
We could talk about that in the post-stream.
Post-stream.
Too.
Post-stream. Not pre-stream.
Yeah, post-stream.
Post-stream. Post-stream. I must get my stream. We have a few clips to round off, if you're ready.
Yes, let's play
them. It's findings from, well, this first one is Martha Farah. She's one of the doctors here in the documentary. She did a really cool study. Let's check it out, her results.
For the last 10 years, there's been a lot of discussion about cognitive enhancement. A lot of the discussion has been about, you know, the ethics of it. Is it cheating, or the safety of it? But everybody seemed to be assuming that, of course, it would enhance your cognition. So we decided to test and find out.
In some very interesting data from Martha Farah at University of Pennsylvania's lab, some of the initial trials have been done of college students without any sign of ADHD, taking either stimulants or placebo, and every week getting measures, tests of learning.
It was, you know, across a huge battery of different tasks. In the end, we found no significant difference between Adderall and placebo, except for one question. Do you feel that the pill you took today enhanced your cognition?
I think we jump right into the next clip. I think Lauren Stiller kind of ice need to tie
the single most universal effect that amphetamine, Adderall, has on anyone who takes it is a feeling that they're doing better. Okay, that's not a small effect, because the feeling of doing better at something improves your motivation and confidence in doing it.
So that goes back to what YOLO Swaglord 420 in the chat was saying, where you just feel better. You feel like you're doing something better, but you're not actually doing more. You're not completing more tasks. You feel like you are, which, again, can make you complete more tasks just by feeling that you're, it's possible.
Let's give that last clip too.
Carl Hart conclusion. Yeah. Dr. Carl Hart, a personal hero of mine. I'm looking into him. We're going to get him on the show. Really cool guy. Yeah. Is Zelda crying?
I
think she is.
People think
amphetamine
being smart pills, and these, they're not. They certainly can help you stay awake when you should be asleep. Can help you endure a boring task a lot longer. But it doesn't add anything new or cognition.
So that was a very good point that he made. He kind of summed up everything right there. There's been plenty of studies, too, that back that up, that you don't have an increase in IQ. You're not increasing your cognitive ability. You know, it's just staying awake. You're stimulated.
Yeah, you're not sleeping. You are depriving yourself of sleep.
Hence why it's popular for college students cramming.
Yes. Well, first they got to play Fortnite for 8 hours, and then they got to study.
My other question, especially to the audience too, and anyone listening out there, is back to the ethics. You know, where is the line drawn? I'm especially interested because the school that I went to had an honor code that you will not take unfair advantage of another. But I think people were taking Adderall at my school. It wasn't widely talked about, but were they taking an unfair advantage?
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah.
They definitely were. That's an unfair advantage.
Yeah. So
interesting.
Ask
at healthytalkshow.com.
Or we could still take your phone call.
We can still take phone calls even after stream if you want to call in.
Yeah, we'll still be around in the chat.
We'll still be around. We have a closing question from one of the other doctors. I can't say his name. It's Anjan Chatterjee.
Yes.
Chatterjee. And it's a very philosophical. I like this. I like his approach here. So let's check this out. Play.
I think focusing on the use or abuse, depending on how people feel about this, is symptomatic of something broader. This highly competitive environment in which people feel compelled to compete beyond their possibilities to get ahead. This kind of focus on material progress and productivity, what's the cost of that? And is that a cost we're willing to live with?
That's the question we want the answer to. Ask at HealthyTalkShow.com.
Yes.
Because if society's okay with it, then it's what it is. But why is meth illegal?
Yeah.
Kind of bothers me.
Yeah. And I know we can't police the students. I'm trying to address the comments here.
Yep. From Yolo Swag Lord. Well, you can't police the students.
But that's why I want to start having these conversations, though. Why yes. are the students feeling such pressure? What kind of a society are we creating?
Yep.
This kind of the cutthroat culture, trying to get ahead, trying to beat somebody all the time, trying to be perfect.
And we live literally really close to a college campus, a major college campus yes. in California. And we talk to students all the time, and they're always stressed out just over being students. Just being regular students. They're yes. just stressing out about that.
Everyone is really stressed out.
Yep. We have Dr. Jane's Vitamin, psychedelic researcher in the documentary. A little clip here I like to play just because it kind of goes back to the selling because he talks about side effects and kind of goes back to the marketing and all that good stuff. Yeah. Check this out.
Safer, simpler, less physiologically disruptive substances and that have better side effects. A substance has never any side effects. They're all effects. It's just which ones you want to. If you're selling, you go for one set of effects. If you're looking at helping people who are being tortured by their pharmaceuticals, you look at other effects.
And that's marketing. But he was also touching into microdosing a little bit with LSD and mushrooms. But we're not going to get into that in episode one because that's a whole yeah. other episode. And I've yes. got a lot of, we got to reach out to people on that one.
Yeah. But
I have a lot of questions.
He brings up a good question too of effects and dosing. You know, why is meth so illegal? You know, if you could just take meth at smaller doses, which it is, again, prescribed to, again, rarely, simply because of the stigma around meth. You know, it's very interesting questions.
Yep.
And back to the unfair advantage point.
Well, it's 8Pookie in the chat on twitch.tv/healthytalkshow. Unfair advantage in relation to what? Education in general?
Yeah. Well, in college, everything
in society, just being able to function at a higher,
yeah,
in at your a higher job, plane, yeah,
to get a promotion,
athletics,
to get a better grade. Oh, athletics.
Yeah, there's a football player in this documentary too. Actually, got kicked out of the NFL because he had a waiver or whatever it's called, some kind of release on the pill where he could take yeah. Adderall, I believe.
Yeah.
And then he popped a Ritalin. They drug tested him when he popped the Ritalin, and he got busted for it just yeah. for the Ritalin, even though they're very similar, but they're not the same. So yeah, it was a legal thing. He screwed up.
They're chemically not the same, yeah, but
they do similar effects, but they treat ADHD.
But that's part of the conversation. Is it unfair? You know what?
Yeah, is it? Is society okay with it? If society's okay with it, that's fine.
Are we all supposed to be cracked out on yeah. Adderall?
Because there are going to be long term effects yeah. of using a stimulant like this. Your heart can only take so much.
Yeah.
So, and,
you know, I still would like to dive more into the liver damage too, because that was mentioned by a few people. Yeah, it's a very good question.
Yeah.
And these are questions facing our society.
Yeah, and personally, I think we need to decriminalize all drugs.
Yeah.
Because drug addiction's not a crime. Thank you very much. We don't need to put people in prison for having a problem.
Yeah.
I might not get a promotion, but I'll keep a functioning heart. Hey, Pookie. Yeah, that's right. I'll stay alive longer.
Yeah.
I went on the age.
That's true. You actually might have heart issues earlier in life if yeah. you are on these stimulants for a prolonged period of time. I think there was some research about that, but
yeah, I want to go into really quick, just take the show here, hijack it a little bit, because I want to go over the criticisms of the film.
Oh yeah, let's.
And I thought
do
they were
that.
Funny, so I pulled up two articles. This one,
Netflix Take Your Pills Anti-Science and Anti-Mean. And this, she references videos and stuff and below, but it doesn't, the videos aren't there. So I don't know if I have an ad blocker that's blocking the video. But the interesting thing is she actually references this article from Realist. The article is by Christopher Campbell. Read the article. He originally was staunch against pharmaceuticals and questioning them all the time. And then his son, I believe, one of his children became diagnosed with ADHD. And now he's, so I pulled some quotes here. Klayman promotes, the director of Take Your Pills, through inclusion, the new fad of LSD microdosing, as if the whole issue to begin with is about the drug of choice rather than the dosage. Okay. It's another frustrating comment from the young artist who says, he calls this guy out because he doesn't like the fact. Let's play this clip here. From
After
Jasper.
Not being on it all the time, I feel more comfortable with who I am, like with my body and stuff. I would never put my kid on Adderall, ever, because I know what it does to you, and like, it's not fun being on it. I feel like it was too easy to put a kid on something close to meth and not question it. There's other things you could do, just teach him how to focus.
I like that. Teach him how to focus, because someone in the chat room brought up just parenting and all that stuff. And then the Chris Campbell, the author of the article in the Thrillist, said, which sounds really logical and easy, but isn't practical or affordable for most families. Believe me, if behavior therapy was a feasible option for my son and not costly in its time and commitment as much as it is its literal expense, I'd prefer it to medication. But it's true. Kids with ADD and ADHD should probably go through some multimodal process to potentially limit or eliminate the need for a drug treatment down the road. He may not have had that luxury. The artist does make one salient point in that the same mostly misguided statement, it's too easy to put a kid on something close to meth and not question it. So at least he pointed that out. But I don't like this guy, the Thrillist guy, whatever his name is, Chris Campbell, because that bothers me. Shouldn't medication always be the last resort? I was always taught that.
Yeah.
I don't know what everyone else is taught. Please let me know in the chat. But I was always taught you don't take anything. Not even aspirin. Don't give your kid aspirin. Give them nothing unless they absolutely need it. Because the body's developing. The mind's developing. You don't want to stop that growth process. You don't want to stop that process or halt it or do anything to interrupt it.
Yeah. And there's still a lot of questions on what the long-term side effects are in our children that we're medicating. But it also leaves questions of what can we do as a society to better support our children. Going back to the cultural differences, I think in Asian cultures too, they tend to live with multi-generations of families. So they have support from parents and grandparents to try to raise the children and help them focus and develop other techniques. While maybe in the U.S. we don't have as many nuclear families or tight nuclear families. And I don't just mean, you know, traditional male-female. I just mean, you know, two parents at home.
Two parents, multiple parents, yeah. More than one.
And I think generally, too, you have a lot of parents that they both have to work, unfortunately, to support the household. And then that leaves them with very little options. But
yeah.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to get too sidetracked.
Yeah. But. Yeah. We also have, we did some tests here online to see. Oh, the chat room's chiming in here. Cataracts TV. I don't even take pain medicine, unless I can't function or barely function without it. I'm the same way. Had hernia surgery. Did not take any Vicodin. Let me pull up test results here. I think we're closing out the show here.
Yeah.
But we actually took an ADHD. Do you have ADHD test? So okay. Here's Robert's ADHD score. I scored a 20.
So ADHD possible, which...
I can't zoom in. I don't know why. Oh, yeah, because I'm using the wrong mouse. Here we go.
Oh.
I went through the pictures again. That's us again.
Was us researching. That's us researching.
There we go. There we go. So, it's at Psych Central. Go take it. Go take it. And Marissa's score, 27. So, she is moderate ADHD.
Which is very interesting, according to this test.
Yeah, I don't know why this jumped around.
That also shows, too, how, you know, easy it is to kind of self-diagnose and maybe go to your doctor saying that you need it.
Yep.
And then we've heard stories of people manipulating their doctor.
Yes. Maybe? Yes. I actually have a text from someone who said that she dated a guy who, when he was in college, went to the psychiatrist
and manipulated them to get Adderall, and then he would save it for all of his friends, and they would all take it during exam time.
Crazy.
That's.
So you do bring up a good point of what are the long-term side effects of someone with diagnosed ADHD going unmedicated. So that's kind of unknown, and it all depends on the severity. And that's something that's not really addressed in the documentary. And of course, you know, if you really cannot function at all without medication, we would want you to take it and do what's best for your body.
Yeah, don't take any medical advice from us.
Yeah. Always listen to your body.
And your doctor.
Listen to your doctor.
We have to legally say that.
Yes, but, you know, at the same time, it raises questions of what happens if you don't fit the mold of society, too.
Yep, exactly. And what is the mold of society? We're human beings. We're so different. We're so unique. We're, you know, everyone's different. Everyone's unique. Why medicate to be the same?
Yeah.
And to be a bunch of super soldiers.
And what's interesting, too, is it is, you know, it's considered to be a chemical imbalance, but there's not really a test for it. So then these, you know, like we just took these tests online, they're...
It's a survey.
Yeah. Essentially how you feel.
Yeah. And anyone who can game a survey, of course, knows how to do that. And, you know, you don't answer the questions accurately, or you answer them to get your, you know, get your prescription.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
And, you know... Going back to our society, we all want to have our perfect life. We all want to have it all, good grades. We want to look pretty and party all night too. And people feel like Adderall might be a way to do it because it is legal.
It is legal.
And that's another worrisome thing for us. Just because it's legal doesn't necessarily mean it's safe.
Yep.
Or people may not realize too. The long-term implications of taking this drug.
Yep, and they're not clearly described
to
people taking this drug.
Yeah.
Although Jasper had to check the color of his poop. And he couldn't drink senior year. Was that high school or college? He's not supposed to be drinking senior year of high school there, buddy.
Yeah.
You know, busted you. Busted.
But, all right.
Well, I think we can close the show. What do you think? First episode, success.
Think so.
Everything worked. We're still functioning. We're still here.
Yes.
Please follow us on Twitch, twitch.tv/healthytalkshow. We need followers. We're 3 away, I think.
Yes.
So if you follow us or, just follow us so we can get that subscribe button. It'd be really nice.
Oh, we have our names on the
right
on
there.
The screen.
Right there. Right there. Those are our names right there. Anyways, it was nice chatting with everybody.
Yes, thank you
so
much.
We will stay on Twitch. We will take calls if you guys want to talk on Discord or anything. We got to edit video and stuff, so it's a long process.
Yeah, we're still going to be streaming.
Still going to be streaming. Have a good night. I don't think there's anything else. I'm going to put up our social stuff for the video podcast feed. Good night, everybody. Have a...
Yeah, good night. We'll be posting links
soon. Ask at healthytalkshow.com.
All right, good night.